You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. It's the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jays.
Yes, this is the Locked On Celtics podcast, and I want to thank you for joining us once again, this time after the Celtics lose to the Houston Rockets, 127-113, tough one going into Houston, losing to James Harden, who went off against the Celtics for 45 points on 11 of 26 shooting, 9 of 18 from three. That is a record 9 made three-pointers by an opponent against the Celtics. 14 of 17 from the line for Harden. He killed the Boston Celtics, but there is a lot more to this night. And I, John Corrales of MassLive.com, am going to talk about it. Jay King, Sam Jam Packard, not here on the podcast tonight, so I will be rolling through the night, including more on Harden. The offensive rebounding, which really killed the Celtics. Eric Gordon, who I thought was instrumental in this game, and really, I think, the reason why the Celtics lost beyond James Harden. And then later, I will discuss some of the good. Marcus Morris, Kyrie Irving, some of the bad, the bench issues, Daniel Tice, Jason Tatum's night, Gordon Hayward's night again. Then your comments, your tweets, Rain and Jays, Rain and Junk hashtag. All of it is coming up here. Let's get into the beginning. James Harden, who stormed out to a monster first quarter, killing the Celtics for 17 points on 6 of 9 shooting, 5 of 8 from 3, almost all of them on that damn step back to the right with a defender there. Even I see people talking about the switches from the Celtics. It didn't even matter. It wasn't that they were switching. The defender was there. He was just stepping back to his right, quick step back, sidestep, and hitting the shot. And basically unguardable unless you're Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart on James Harden did a decent job. Good job. I shouldn't be downplaying it. Marcus Smart did a good job on James Harden for the most part. There were some threes towards the end, but mostly during the second and third quarters, Marcus Smart did a pretty good job. But otherwise, I think early on, the biggest problem, I think, when they were guarding James Harden is they were giving him too much space. And we saw an adjustment that was made later in the game in the second quarter when he came back. I saw Al Horford, when he switched out onto Harden, really got up in Harden's airspace. Daniel Tice in the third quarter switched onto Harden and really got into his airspace. Now, Daniel Tice didn't have a great game, but he, and that's putting it mildly, but there was that possession where he got uptight on Harden. And I think if you have help behind you, that's kind of how you have to play Harden and hopefully not, first of all, not foul him. Secondly, prevent him from getting into a place where he's comfortable operating in space. And those step backs are going to be a big issue. But Harden was just unstoppable in this game. And I know I spent the last podcast complaining about not liking Harden and watching how he plays. This game was not anything that I was talking about. I think from a non-Celtics perspective, this was a fantastic game from Harden and not the aesthetically displeasing game. The fouls that were called, mostly, I thought, were legitimate fouls. He wasn't hunting. The Celtics did a terrible job when they were overly aggressive in contesting the threes and landing in his airspace. You have to let a guy come down. And a couple of times they got caught too far underneath him. And Brad Stevens said after the game, when you're overreacting, you do things like that. And the Celtics overreacted. They did a good job, I think, in the second and third quarters. In the second quarter, he didn't score. He was 0 of 6. In the third quarter, he picked it up a bit. He had 12 points. But I think that happened more towards the end. And obviously his fourth quarter was when he did a ton of the damage, especially from the line where he went 11 of 12 from the free throw line. That's when everything really fell apart for the Celtics. Harden, superstar player, MVP. That's a game they're going to have to try to withstand. And I think they could have withstood it if a couple of other things happened. If they had boxed out and not given up a ton of offensive rebounds. Clint Capella had 9 offensive rebounds. He had 2 more offensive rebounds than the entire Celtics had. The Celtics got out-rebounded in this game 54-38. They got out-rebounded on the offensive boards 16-7. So second chance points, 18-8. That's a 10-point difference. In a 14-point game, that's a big difference. And that's not to say that there's never going to be a second chance point, but when you're giving up that many second chance points, that's going to be something that's hard to withstand. Clint Capella had a monster game, 24 points, 18 rebounds, and most of that damage was overreacting to drives and not getting back and boxing out. You give up that many offensive rebounds. Daniel House Jr. had a couple of offensive rebounds. Other guys stepped in, Tucker, Gordon. Everybody seemed to do some damage on the offensive boards. In fact, Harden was the only guy that didn't have an offensive board. That's because he was out shooting from three the whole night. Everyone else was crashing the boards. Rough night on the rebounding. That's just, the Celtics are not going to be a good rebounding team. They're just not a good rebounding team. But that's something that had to be a focus coming in. If you're overreacting to James Harden, you're going to get beat. You're either going to get beat with lobs or backdoor cuts or offensive rebound. If you're overreacting, and they overreacted, and Capella smoked them by crashing boards. And that, I think, if they had just boxed out some, that would have been a big help in surviving the James Harden game. Eric Gordon, I think every time I looked up, Gordon was hitting a big shot. He was doing something really important. He had 20 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. It just felt like Gordon was the one guy that they could have stopped. And he's a really good player. To give up 20 points for him, it's not the end of the world. It's not like they gave up 20 points to Michael Carter Williams or something. But they could have done more to defend Gordon, and I think the combination of Gordon and the offensive rebounds is really what sunk the Celtics, because again, 45 points, you can withstand that from James Harden. You can if you hold the rest of the team in check. They did not do that. They did not keep Capella in check. He crashed the boards and killed him. They did not keep Eric Gordon in check. He hit key shots over and over and killed them. The Celtics were very much in this game. They were tied at 79 with 3:47 left. And this brings us to another problem, not having Kyrie Irving on the floor. They were tied at 79 with 3:47 left, and Kyrie Irving came out of the floor a few minutes later with the Celtics down 4. Kyrie comes out of the game. 5 minutes later, so we span the quarter break, at 8:53, he comes in, the Celtics are down 12. And Gordon, Capella, Harden, in that stretch, did the damage. And the Celtics continue to struggle without Kyrie on the floor. You look at the box score, Kyrie Irving was a +6. In a 14-point loss, Kyrie Irving was a +6. Al Horford was a +10. He led the Celtics in the plus minus. But Kyrie has to do it all for the Celtics, and it's tough because he can't play every minute of the game, played 36 minutes in this one. He's got to sit sometime, and that bench has to be better. take a short break to talk about more of the bench, which really didn't do much outside of Jalen Brown or Jalen Green. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But Kyrie, the bench, and a lot more coming up next. The Celtics won one quarter in this game. The second quarter, they won it 31-22. They gave up 35 points in each of the other three, and they lost the first quarter by 11. They lost the third quarter by 4, and they lost the fourth quarter by... They won the third quarter, though, by 9, and that was mostly on the backs of Al Horford and Marcus Morris, Marcus Smart, and Kyrie, who was 5 of 5 from the line in that quarter, but mostly Horford on fire and Marcus Morris on fire. Marcus Morris was just phenomenal for most of this game. He got ejected late in the game, which is weird. I don't understand why a delay of game technical is allowed to be part of the two technicals that gets you ejected, but hanging on the rim and that technical is not. If you hang on the rim, like Clint Capella got the tech for hanging on the rim, which was, I think, a crappy tech, but regardless. But if Capella had gotten a technical foul later in the game, he wouldn't have gotten ejected, because that hanging on the rim is not considered some like unsportsmanlike. But a delay of game technical is. And that, I don't know. I feel like either it's a tech or it's not. And if you're going to make the exception for hanging on the rim, which is supposed to be taunting, and if you're saying that that's not some sort of unsportsmanlike thing or whatever the classification is, I don't understand why something like that is classified differently than the delay of game. The delay of game tech combined with the tech that Morris got, which was called by an off official, like on the other end of the floor, and Morris waved the official off, kind of did like the get out of here thing. It wasn't even the official involved in the play. It was an official on the other end of the court that called the technical foul and ejected him. Now, at that point, it was late in the game, and the Celtics were already down by 14. They could have mounted a comeback. They could have, but I'm not going to say that this was a critical ejection, because Morris was on the floor and the Celtics were getting crushed here in the fourth. But it's still a very confusing thing. But Marcus Morris, in general, in this game, again, was very good. I thought watching him just hit those shots that he's been hitting all season long, the threes, to regain the lead eventually. And I thought that was just Marcus Morris being the type of Marcus Morris that we've seen all season. I thought he was fantastic in this game for most of it, I guess, except for the ejection, but I'm not going to get on him for that. He was a plus 3 on the night. He rebounded well again, 6 rebounds, shot amazingly well, 6 of 11 from the field, 3 of 5 from 3. Awesome, I think, performance from Marcus Morris. Again, Marcus Smart was also really good. 11 points, 3 assists, not great shooting, I guess, overall. 1 of 5 from 3, but he played James Harden pretty well, I think, defensively. There were a lot of times where he was guarding Harden, and Harden just gave the ball up. There were a couple of times where, knowing that the Celtics switched everything, Marcus Smart was not on Harden, and the guy that Smart was guarding came over to set a pick for Harden, and Harden like waved it off as if to say, no, I do not want this guy to switch on to me. I don't think James Harden likes being guarded by Marcus Smart. Who would? He's a pit bull. He's crazy. Before the game, Brad Stevens talked about getting Marcus Smart some all defense notoriety. He's got a fair point. He is an all defense level defender, and I don't see why he hasn't gotten that kind of shine yet. He should. I mean, at some points, Harden is just going to go off and do what he does. But I think generally Marcus Smart did a great job. Daniel Tice and the rest of the bench did not do a great job. Daniel Tice was a minus 27. The bench, I think, collectively was minus a lot, minus 19 for Hayward, minus 22 for Jaylen Brown, minus 16 for Terry Rozier. And Brown was pretty decent offensively, 18 points on 7 of 12 shooting. Struggled from three. After the game, he had a big wrap on his hand and said that the hand has been bothering for a month and a half. And Scal said in the broadcast that he kind of doesn't want to hear it. And I kind of get what Scal's saying. I kind of agree to a point. If you're out on the floor, then you have to be good. And if you're not good, then you have to figure something out. Is this an exceptional case? Like Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward has not been particularly good recently. He's trying to do other things. He had 6 rebounds and 5 assists. But I think there are some nights where he's just not confident in himself and not confident in driving or his athleticism, which there was, what game was it? The Charlotte game where, yeah, it was Charlotte where he got the alley-oop. And he was showing the athleticism there. He has it. It's in him. I think there's still a mental block. I think there's still a lack of comfort. And I think some days he feels better than others, maybe. But Hayward is still getting himself into trouble because teams are still playing him to pass off drives. And that's really bottling him up. He's not getting the explosiveness, first of all. He's not getting that burst. Like he shows when doing things maybe instinctively, when he's thinking too much, when he's driving and he kind of sees it coming. I think something gets in his head right now, and it's going to take some time to get rid of that. I don't know what's really, really happening, but there are times where he can flex that athleticism, chase down blocks occasionally. He's gotten up. I saw him get up for a huge rebound in that Charlotte game. It's like, wow, man, he can really get up. He has that athleticism in him. I think the body is there. I think the mind is still struggling. And what happens is things like tonight where he still gets played to pass. And he only had one turnover, but there were times where he drove and you could just tell he wasn't trying to score and he passed out of those opportunities, and they weren't turnovers, but I'm sure some of those possessions didn't end well, and that ends up might as well be a turnover. And for Hayward, I'll get back to Jaylen Brown on this. For Hayward, he needs to get that confidence going. He needs to get out there and play these minutes. You can't take minutes away from him necessarily. He only played 24 minutes as it is. 24 minutes off the bench. That's what you play a role player. And that's what Gordon Hayward is right now. He's a role player until he figures things out. Jaylen Brown, though, a little bit different because he's got this thing. And if you're out there and you've got this injury and you can't play through it, then you have to sit down and let it heal. If you are having issues shooting the ball, then sit back and let it get better. He was aggressive. He had some pretty nice moves. I don't want to blame the hand for everything because he had a post-up move and he hit a fadeaway. Was it over Gordon? Or over Austin Rivers maybe? He shot the ball on that fadeaway, looked good. So if the hand's bothering him, then the hand would be bothering him for everything. But he still had that rap. He says it's been bothering him. Again, overall, a decent night. If he had hit one of the other three threes that he missed, then he would have shot 50% and it would look better. But one of four looks worse. 3 of 5 from the line, that's just about right for him, I guess. Again, but if he hit a fourth one, then that would have been 80% from the line. So one miss kind of colors how you think a guy played in the game. I thought he did all right. There were times where he stepped out onto James Harden and really did a nice job. When he's right, Jaylen Brown is going to be the guy that probably guards James Harden when Marcus Smart's not out on the floor. So he can be the guy that does that and plays well for you offensively. I think when he's right, that's going to be a very key position for the Celtics. I think Jaylen Brown can be a guy that can get the Celtics points off the bench and guard guys like Harden. That's, I think, ultimately going to be his role. He's just a little too inconsistent. But tonight, I thought he did a good job. Back to Daniel Theis, who just kind of got murdered on the night. Really, 6 points, but more so just lacking the ability to score in general, to stop guys, to do anything really positive on the floor. He needs to be more aggressive attacking. There are times where he stopped short and tried to bank shot or tried to take short jumpers, and he really should have just kept on going, kept on attacking. And the bench is really where I thought the Celtics could do some damage. When the Rockets are bringing Austin Rivers and Gerald Green and Nene off the bench, and those are your only three guys that came off the bench, that should be a win for the Celtics. But it didn't feel like it was a win because the Rockets bench shots, it looks like about 50%, 10 of 19. So yeah, about 50%. That's what that is. And that's just, you can't let that bench come in and kill you. The Rockets starters obviously played a bulk of the minutes. They were shorthanded. They're not that deep, but Austin Rivers comes in and does a couple of decent things. He even banks in an end of quarter shot to beat the clock. Gerald Green comes in and drills some shots to put the Celtics away. Nene comes in, plays 10 minutes, but you know, he's 3 of 3 and has 6 rebounds in 10 minutes and is a team high plus 25. Celtics bench has to be better than that. And Theis, I get that Theis was relied on because Al Horford was on a minutes restriction. That's another thing that hurt the Celtics. He played 24 minutes and they're still trying to stick to that. They can't have him playing too many minutes right now with that knee. And with Robert Williams not available, injured with some kind of mysterious leg injury, that leaves very little depth. There's a question whether the Celtics should have played Semi Ojeleye or more Yabusele, but if Daniel Theis is going to be ineffective, then the Celtics have other options. And I guess that part of it is because Brad Stevens didn't want to punt on the rebounding. He wanted to at least try to do something about the rebounding, but there is a question here. I think there's a legitimate question about whether Semi Ojeleye should have gone into and not punt away the rebounding, but they were not rebounding well anyway. And if Theis wasn't going to do it, whether by intention or by just inability, then somebody else probably would have had to step up. At least get Ojeleye out there. He's a tough defender. He would have boxed out. I can see it. I saw some of those calls on Twitter. And speaking of Twitter, we're going to come back after the break with your tweets. Rain and Jay's Rain and Junks. Stay with us. Every game, we ask you to interact with us and try to get on the podcast with the hashtag Rain and Jays or Rain and Junk. I am going to fly through some of these tweets, and that'll be our last segment before we end the podcast. So let's start at the beginning with Daniel Reifler at Reifsey. Celtics got thumped in the first, and I don't even think they played bad. What can you do with Harden hitting like that? Yeah, that's one of the biggest issues in guarding him, is that step back is impossible to guard sometimes. It's just impossible. He is excellent at understanding how you're positioned, how your weight distribution is, whether you're able to get to his shooting hand and to step back that way and hit the shot. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to do it so consistently because you're going away from the basket. You're so far away. I don't think people understand how far away an NBA three-pointer really is. And most guys, when they shoot, they step forward. When you see a guy like, watch Terry Rozier shoot. And when he takes the shot, where he jumps and where he lands, his body, his momentum is moving forward. He's using his whole body to propel the ball that far. Harden is stepping backwards and drilling threes with the ball, the net not even moving. It's crazy. I know. I just spent the entire last podcast or the end of the last podcast saying I don't like watching him, but those shots are insane. Like that's just insane. There's nothing you can do about that. E.H. Decker, Flask Dad is the king of the Dagger 3. Yeah, man, he's been great. He has been great. And he also follows up here. Smarf lives rent-free in a cozy one-bedroom apartment in Harden's psyche. And that goes to the point I made earlier about some of the passes out of situations where he was guarded by Marcus Smart. So, yeah, I don't think they like each other very much. And I don't think anybody likes to be guarded by Marcus Smart. So that includes James Harden. Andrew Moore at Andrew Moore 1987. James Harden is bailing out absolute trash possessions with reckless step back threes. They are not reckless. Those were very much in control. At Kona King Kahuna. Moment too big for Tice, Time Lord? Well, Williams was hurt. And he was not available for this game. Moment not too big for Tice. I don't think he was afraid by the moment. He's had good games. I don't think he cares. He's had huge games in Europe. The pressure? No, I don't think it's anything like that. Bad game. It's a bad game. He's had a couple defensively that are bad, and he's got to fix that. But bad game. At Scropeberg, if anyone has to rip my heart out and make me cry, I'm just glad it's Gerald Green. Yeah, it's hard to be mad at that dude. At Beard Jam, I would really enjoy a Jason Tatum 30-point game soon. Thanks. Yeah, Jason Tatum. Rough game for him, too. And he's just been a little bit inconsistent. I've seen people get on his case. He needs to figure himself out. He is in the process of figuring himself out. He does some things, obviously, very well. He has nights like this. He does some things poorly still. But he's in his second year, and all of the signs point to him being a very, very good player. Is he going to be a multiple-time All-Star player? I think everybody in Boston hopes so. We'll have to wait and see. But I think for Tatum, there's the same patience that you have to have for any other young. He's 20 years old, and aside from the shots he was making last season, the role is different for him. Last season, he was very happy to be the overflow guy. He was not going to force anything. He certainly wasn't going to do a lot of the isolation stuff that he's been doing this season. He was very, very happy to kind of catch and take whatever after Al got his touches, after Kyrie got his touches, after everyone else got their touches. This year, he's a much more aggressive player. He's trying to, you know, he's feeling himself. He's trying to get into that role. So that's part of his step forward. I think he has to you just have to let him grow. And sometimes it's just not going to be pretty. And it wasn't pretty tonight. He didn't shoot well. And he had a bad shooting night in the last game. And it's just sometimes that happens. And it sucks. What we want as fans, we want good players, young players, to just always progress and march forward and never step back. We don't want any steps back, or we don't want it to take longer than we think it should. And that phrase, we think it should, is a horrible phrase, but we're all guilty. I'm certainly guilty. We think certain things should be happening. We think Gordon Hayward should be healthy now. And if he's not, then that's his fault. We never look at our own selves and say, maybe I was wrong for expecting this. No. Once we expect something, we assume that that's correct. And until somebody lives up to that expectation, we're not wrong. It's the player that's wrong. Maybe we needed to adjust our expectations on Jason Tatum. That step forward that we were hoping he was going to take, maybe it's not happening. At least not happening now. And not in the way that we thought it would. He's not an all-star candidate. We were hoping he would be, but he's not. So let's just adjust our expectations. Maybe it's going to go slower. Maybe in the second half of the season, it'll come around. And maybe by the playoffs, he'll be what we hope he would. But for now, no. That's it. Sometimes we have to adjust our expectations. It's not all on the players to live up to the things that we artificially put on them. I hate to say it that way sometimes, but it's true that we have to be fair. You can't just say, well, we want you to be an all-star, buddy, and you're not. So it's your fault that you're not, instead of understanding maybe next year he'll be the all-star. Some guys progress at different speeds, and maybe that jump in his first year that was the thing in the first year was great because it exceeded our expectation. We didn't expect him to shoot well because he didn't shoot well at Duke. And then he comes in and he shoots great. And we're like, wow, it's amazing. So everything's perfect. Everything's great. He shot great. And then this year, his numbers are actually good. He's averaging more points. His usage is up. He's getting more points. His efficiency numbers are pretty close to what they were last year. There's been no significant drop in anything, really. He's the leading Celtics rebounder. He's playing well. That's the thing. He's playing well. But he's not playing as good as we had hoped. So something is wrong. Just check yourselves, I think. And that includes me. I have to check myself. And that's what I'm doing with Gordon Hayward. I'm checking myself with Gordon Hayward. It's not Gordon Hayward's fault that he didn't live up to what I thought he was going to be. It was my fault. It was my fault for expecting him to be more than he was going to be coming in. And that's not him. It's me. And if you listen to everything I've been saying, I've been the one that's been apologizing for putting that expectation on him because it was unfair. It was unfair. And that's my fault. So that's, I think, just how you have to approach it. So Jordan Paulin, if we get Rondo back and he helps us win a championship again, will his number ever be retired? I'm not even going to bother answering that because we're never getting Rondo back. So why did Coach Brad Stevens, oh, this is from Robert Denton, not put Yabu back out early in the fourth? He clogged the lane and rebounded. I don't know. That's a good question. I have to go back and see why Yabu didn't get back in the game, but I don't know. I have no answer for that. At Beer Jam, Gordon looks to pass way too often. Yeah, like I said before, when teams know that he's driving and not looking to score, they get in the passing lane. I think sometimes, like, I love him facilitating the offense, but he needs to be a threat when he drives to score to be effective. And right now, he's not as much, so that's going to be a problem. At EH Decker, well, there's EH underscore Decker. My only real takeaways from the Celtics game tonight, rebounding some ever is probably a good idea. James Harden can effing shoot. There is a secret war on Marcus Morris brewing. That's basically the game. I think that pretty much sums it up. Joey Angus 11. The ruin the game hashtag doesn't belong to Steph Curry. It belongs to James Harden. Thumbs down emoji. Yes, this is junk, but I want Corrales to talk about this and know that wasn't a compliment. Was that not a compliment for me? I'm kind of confused on that one. But the ruin the game hashtag does not belong to Steph Curry. I do not think Steph Curry is ruining the game. He's not. He can do something exceptionally well. Why are people hating on something that somebody can do exceptionally well? If you don't like to watch it, fine. You can say, I don't like to watch it. I don't, like I said about James Harden, I'm not hating on him for doing what he does. I just don't like to watch it, generally. Tonight, again, not a good example of that. I think tonight he played a very good game, and that was not my aesthetically displeasing type of game. I thought he was fantastic, and if I wasn't watching this from a Celtics perspective, I would have probably been in much greater awe of what he did, more so than I am now. But Curry, no, he didn't ruin the game. I don't think Harden ruined the game either. I don't think anybody's ruining the game. If there's anything that ruins the game, it's guys who can't shoot threes trying to do some of the stuff that Harden is doing. And I guess that's your point when you say he's ruining the game. But eventually that gets schemed out and coaches, like, you can't be taking crazy step backs if you can't hit the crazy step backs. And eventually I think your coach will take you out for taking those crazy step backs. There's only certain guys who can do it, and Harden is one of them. But if people are saying like, oh, but the kids, they're copying those guys. Okay. Well, so aren't there coaches in the youth leagues? Aren't there coaches that teach kids how to play? I know USA Basketball and this, I forget what the committee, whatever it's called, they put out their guidelines that they don't want certain kids under a certain age taking three-pointers, which I agree with because they're too young. They're too young. But at some point, that's what the game is. That's what the game is. If you do it right, they can be fine. Nobody's ruining the game. People need to relax with that. Basketball evolves. At some point, this quote-unquote ruining the game is going to be the good old days for people. The people, like the young kids who are coming up and saying, no, they're not ruining the game. I love Steph. At some point, 30, 40, 50 years from now, they're going to look at basketball as old people and they're going to go, oh, this person's ruining the game. Why couldn't it be nice and pure like back when Steph Curry played? I mean, that's how these things work. Just because we don't like it doesn't mean it's ruining the game. It's just different. Let's embrace it. All right, let's get to the rain and junk hashtag. E.H. Decker, the world needs Boston Sports remake of Good Will Hunting with Brock Holt in the Damon role and Daniel Tice as Affleck, Belichick for Williams. I don't know about that. Stevens for Skarsgård, Baines, Hauser. Tell me I'm wrong. You're wrong. Who would be a good Good Will Hunting? Yeah, I guess Brock Holt. Sure, I can see that. Daniel Tice is after. I know. I would think maybe Julian Edelman as Affleck. I don't know why. I think he'd be a good Affleck. For Williams, let's see. See, I think Brad Stevens could do the Williams bit, but he's not folksy enough. Belichick is too serious for that role. That role, like, there's humor in there. Like, and Belichick does have, you know, the Bon Jovi thing, which is funny, but I don't know. That's a tough one. I'm going to go with Brad Stevens on that one and move on. At Grizzle Puff, Jalen Green is a good one. There's another Jalen Green because it's from at Mr. Pierce, just the hashtag Jalen Green. So Marv Albert on that fadeaway jumper called Jaylen Brown, Jalen Green. And look, Marv Albert, legend. He's called some of the biggest games in history. He's been fantastic. He is struggling a bit. And look, he's been at this forever. I don't even know how old he is. And look, there's a lot of guys who are late in their years who are calling games, and some of them are doing great and some of them aren't. And some of them are hanging on maybe just a tiny bit too long. And I think Marv is kind of there, which sucks. But I mean, come on, Jalen Green, come on, man. And then you pair him with Chris Webber. And I don't mind C-Webb in certain roles, but pairing him with Marv was not entirely great to listen to. At JoeAngus11, if Gordon dunked on either of those drives, I would have considered this game a win, but he did not. No, of course he did not. I don't know what else to say about that other than, yeah, he needs to dunk more. That'd be fun. Boy, I suck at this junk drawer stuff. I'm going to stop because I'm terrible at junk drawer. I am not living up to the Jam Packer junk drawer shenanigans. I am too tired and it's hard to do on your own. So I am stopping before I embarrass myself any further. I can tell I got nothing when it comes to the rain and junk. And so that's it. You know when you see a guy miss a bunch of threes and you're like, he needs to stop shooting those threes? That's what I'm doing. I'm stopping, calling over to the coach, take me out. That's it. I'm done. Thanks for the rain and junk. We'll get Jam on. We'll do a junk drawer, all of that stuff. And yeah, that'll be on the next podcast. So for now, I hope that new listeners are going to subscribe. I hope the regular listeners are enjoying the show enough to give us a 5-star rating and a good review. And of course, share the podcast, spread the word, tell everybody, listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King.